now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching after us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent. Scientists and photography experts have examined the individual frames of this film and have come to the conclusion that the film and the creature are authentic.
Telepathy, psychokinesis, Bigfoot and black masses, UFOs and Atlantis, Kirlian photography, cloning, and cryonics. These subjects all have one thing indisputably in common. People want to know more about them. The mankind's future on Earth and beyond.
Welcome to After Dark Radio with your host, Brian Alvarez.
How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on After Dark Radio. It is Sunday night, December 27, 2015. After Dark Radio here on the Dark Matter Digital Network. A special holiday edition of the show here today. We are recording from the studios in beautiful Cannon Beach, Oregon. And that is going to lead us to the theme of our program here tonight. It is a holiday edition of the show and thus no guest. However, because I was here in Cannon Beach, Oregon, I got to thinking, people love to hear stories of local legends. I don't know if you have been to Cannon Beach, Oregon. It's a beautiful place. It is here on the coast of Oregon. I can look out at the Pacific Ocean right here. Seaside is just up the road. And a little bit past Seaside is a town called Astoria, Oregon. And Astoria, Oregon is filled with buildings that are alleged to be haunted. And so on the show today, I am just going to tell you some stories. I am going to tell you some stories of some ghosts, some hauntings, and some very, very strange things that have been seen and reported from Cannon Beach, Oregon, all the way up to Astoria. I've got some very interesting stories. And as part of the show here today, I'm going to give you a report of an allegedly haunted building that I investigated yesterday out there in Astoria. That's coming up here in a few moments. We have a packed show here today. We don't have a regularly scheduled guest, but in a moment, we are going to be joined by a very good friend of mine, a friend of yours, if you've been listening to this show for a long time. And we're going to be talking about some very exciting news, some of which I'm going to be telling you about right now, and some of which I will be telling you about when the guest ends up getting on the line here in a couple of moments. For a long time on this show, I have been saying, we're going to have a new website soon. Just you wait. The new website is coming. And I told you this, 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 and I told you this month after month. Well, here we are. We had a vacation weekend, and it gave me and my brother-in-law, Tony, the opportunity to finally launch the brand new AfterDarkRadioShow.com website. Some of you probably already checked it out. If not, I suggest you head up there right now. AfterDarkRadioShow.com is the address, and you can see the brand new website. I am looking at it right now. It did just launch a couple of days ago, and so there is work to be done still. We do have some cool features up there right now, and we have more cool features to come, as we'll be talking about here in just a moment. Some things aren't yet working. There is a guests tab here, which has not been populated yet. There is a radio show archive, which has not been populated yet. You can, however, click news. I think. Yes. No, you cannot. This is what happens when you record live. I do have to go up there and fix the news one. But don't worry. Go to the front page, go to the home page, And what you will see is right there, upcoming shows. You'll be able to find out who the next guest is here on this program. As you can see right now, it says December 28, 2015, listeners emailed stories. Actually, the listeners did not email a lot of stories, and so we have a very limited number of listener emailed stories on the show here today. But we do have an in-the-news section. We've got three stories thus far. There are more to come. We have got Welcome to the New After Dark Radio website. I've got a deal here about email your best stories for the show. It's too late. We are taping, but you can always email me at brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. And down there at the bottom, the replay of last week's show. If you missed the show with Rob Brotherton talking conspiracies, you can head up there right now and check that out at afterdarkradioshow.com. Listen to it right now. This show is going to be replacing that show after this one goes off the air here on the Dark Matter Digital Network. So if you're listening live, I recommend you go up and check out the December 20th replay of the Rob Brotherton show. Now, the website's looking good, but we have some extra special surprises that I don't think anybody is going to be expecting. And in a moment, we're going to be joined by a very special guest, an old friend, and we're going to make some announcements here about some very cool things coming to the After Dark Radio Show website. And when the interview concludes, we will be back here and we will delve into some of the mysteries of Cannon Beach, Seaside, and Astoria, Oregon. I've got some very interesting stories, everything from ghosts, hauntings, the alleged bandage man. I've got stories of Bigfoot sightings here in the area. If you've ever been to Astoria, Seaside, or Cannon Beach, Oregon, you'll really like this show. And if not, hopefully when it's over, you'll think, you know, one of these days I have got to go to the Oregon coast and check out the beauty, of course, of the Oregon coast and all of the strange stories from this area. So stand by, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest here on After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Digital Network. We are back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here. After Dark Radio, Dark Matter Digital Network. Very happy today to be joined by a pioneer of After Dark Radio. Carl Stern is joining us here on this holiday edition of the show. And Carl, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Brian. Thanks for having me back on the show. It's been a while. Glad to be back. And taking a little bit of a break during the holiday season here, getting recharged to hopefully hit 2016, hit the ground running, and hopefully doing some pretty cool stuff next year.
That's right. We've got an announcement of sorts to make here on the show today. That being that as we kick off the new year, we have a new website, as I talked about at the beginning of the show. If you want to head up there and check it out, it is up at afterdarkradioshow.com. And one of the special surprises that is part of this new website is Carl is hopefully going to be doing at least one new show every single week on the After Dark Radio website. And I know that you have been working on some evergreen shows, waiting for us to get our act together and get this whole thing going. And tell everybody a little bit about what you're planning for this new show.
Well, Brian, I'm very excited about what I'm calling Dragon King Dark, and that is going to be the new format for the format for the show on the AfterDarkRadioShow.com website. And I tell you, there's just so much stuff I want to. To me, it just frees me up to do so much cool stuff that I want to talk about. Already, I've put together some segments now. I'll be adding to these as we go along, kicking it off with a fresh show. The first one I do will be recorded at the time we're ready to start posting these. And then as we go along, I've already pre-recorded quite a bit of stuff. And it really covers just a huge range of different topics I want to talk about. I'm going to be talking about some local legends and lore from the deep south of the United States, ghost stories, things like that. Plus, we'll take a more psychological look at just some of the thought processes behind the things we'll be discussing on this website. Things like really one of the things I've really loved researching over the years is just fear. What is fear really? And a lot of my shows will deal with What's the baser instincts that's behind some of this stuff that makes it so interesting? UFOs and cryptozoology and all sorts. Why are we even scared of that stuff to begin with? We'll be taking a lot of looks on that. And then we'll be doing a lot of looking at pop culture, different things, whatever's topical movie-wise, dealing with science fiction and
Star Wars.
Star Wars, probably a huge Star Wars fan, as you know. And we'll be talking about things like that, Star Trek, anything dealing with science and technology, we'll be covering that. As you know, also, I'm a big comic book collector. We'll be looking at the history of horror and some of the different macabre stories that used to take place back in the comics during sort of a revolutionary era for them. We'll be doing just stuff like even music that delves into science fiction and stuff like that. So there's just a huge array of different topics that we're going to be covering. So we're not going to just fall into a rut of only talking ghost stories or just talking UFOs or cryptozoology. My show, Dragon King Dark, will be all over the place. You'll never know what you're going to get. And of course, if there's something new about science or something that really sparks the imagination, we're going to certainly be talking about that too. It's really going to be a beautiful open format, and I'm very, very excited about it. Some of the stuff I've put together already that will be going up on the site, I've just had a blast doing it because it's so, the topics just vary so widely. So I promise you, if I'm not talking about what you want to hear on one show, just stick around for the next one. And at some point in time, we're going to be talking about some eclectic stuff that probably maybe you've never even thought about being grouped in with this type of information before. I think it's going to be really fresh and really very interesting.
And of course, the website allows us to do a lot of other cool things as well. If you head up there right now, you can see that we've got some feature stories. We have got the In the News section that is over on the left-hand side of the page. And hopefully we're going to have Andrew Ludsky, who is the Facebook webmaster. If you've ever been to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow, Andrew does an awesome job with that page. And he also writes for culturecrossfire.com. And so we're hoping that we can get him involved and get him writing some stories. Carl is going to be doing some stories for the website as well. I will try to do the same. And we're just going to populate it and turn it into a fun destination for everybody that loves the After Dark radio show and the new Dragon King Dark, Carl's new weekly show, which is going to be debuting there maybe sooner rather than later, as he already has a couple of shows in the can.
And what I'm very excited about this. Very excited. I just can't contain my enthusiasm about this. I'm so this is such a of course on some of the other podcasts I do, I've often delved into the off topics and things like this, and now to have a actual forum to talk about some of this stuff, I promise you it's going to be a very eclectic and interesting mix of stuff.
Now, to kick it off here today, since this is a holiday edition of the show and we don't have a regularly scheduled guest, Carl and I are going to talk a little bit about the year that was 2015. As we head into 2016 here, there were some big stories that came out in this genre over the last year. I've got a couple of them that I want to look back on. And Carl has got a couple as well that I'm sure he knows way more about than I do, and so I'm going to throw that to him after a while. But we got a list of five stories. These, I think, are five of the best mysterious stories from all of 2015. And I want to start off with the disappearance of MH370. And I bring that up because my wife is intrigued by this. When this thing went down, all she could do was just watch CNN and try and figure out what happened to this airplane. Why haven't they found this airplane yet? What's going on? And here we are. It is the end of the year. We still have no answers. We don't know what happened. The latest news, real news, I guess, really, was back from July when they found a flaperon, which I guess is something off the right wing of the airplane, and it was found on a beach, Reunion Island, in the Indian Ocean. Of course, MH370 did not disappear in 2015, but the search for it and You know, the search continued throughout the year, and we were waiting for information, and we never got it. If I recall correctly, the piece was found, and initially, people were like, well, we don't know if it was from MH370. And of course, then the question remains, well, what other what other airplanes are missing in that area? So it appears that there is at least part of the airplane found, but we still haven't found the whole airplane. I guess they're going to continue searching until halfway through 2016, June or July 2016. And after that, who even knows? We may never know the answer to this. But a very fascinating story, the idea that an airplane could completely disappear in 2014, 2015, with all of the satellites and the tracking and everything, and it wasn't found.
This story continues to just baffle me, for lack of a better word. And again, you summed it up best there at the end. And it's 2015, and we're not talking about, you know, someone lost in the woods, not to be found again. We're not talking about a missing person, and maybe a vehicle comes missing. We're talking about an airplane with many people on board in an era where we are so worldwide, so terrorism conscious, in a world post Cold War where we were tracking literally every airborne object for fear that, you know, Russia was sending up something or we were sending up something, you know, every conceivable thing's being tracked around the world, to jump to the fact that we've lost an entire airplane, a jetliner, not a small airplane, a full-size jumbo jet, full of people, with still, over a year later, no clue what became of them. It's just, it's absolutely mind-blowing. And I mean, you know, and it's from things like this that seem so implausible that you do get, you know, conspiracy theories. That's where, you know, when there's no readily easy explanation for something like this, I mean, the mind just goes wild, and pretty soon you have all kinds of conspiracy theories. What happened to this? You know, terrorism has been discussed as a very strong candidate for what happened to this plane, possibly a pilot that went rogue and crashed this thing. But the thing is, we don't know. The plane's still missing. Possibly some debris has been found. But, you know, when you get down to looking at the reality of the situation, the more rational mind wants to say, you know, the ocean's such a vast place. I'm sure I know you've been out across the vast ocean water before.
I'm looking at the Pacific Ocean right now.
Well, there you go. So you can see horizon to horizon, and there's nothing but water. The oceans are a huge place, and an aircraft in relation to those huge oceans really is a tiny thing. It is the proverbial needle in a haystack, except the haystack covers 3/4 of the planet. So it's actually not as inconceivable as it seems like it is. But again, you know, these are very valid questions. It's 2015, and the fact that I can look at my telephone and know where my wife and kids are at any given moment, and yet we lose a whole jumbo jet, that's just, I don't know. It really is rather inconceivable, and really does make the mind kind of kick into the imagination, saying what's really going on here. I mean, and you know, I'm always interested in conspiracy theories. They're one of the things we talk about on my show. I've said many times I'm not really a conspiracy theorist, but I seldom ever believe the official story either. You know, I think a lot of times conspiracy theories are ridiculous and outlandish, but at the same time, look, I've worked for the government for over 20 years. I know not to believe them either. So what do you say when something is outlandish as a whole plane disappearing for this length of time? I don't know. It confounds conventional wisdom. That's the best I can spin it.
You know, it's one thing. I think most people listening to this right now, maybe not some of the younger listeners, but I think that most of the people listening to this right now have heard of the Bermuda Triangle. And the whole Bermuda Triangle legend spawned from some airplanes disappearing in the area in the 1940s. 1930s, 40s. These planes and ships disappeared. And we're talking, it wasn't quite 100 years ago, but it was the early part of the last century. And here we are, again, 2016, 2015. Plane disappears, nobody knows where it went. And it is something to think about. A second story that I want to get into here today is the Roswell slides, which have been largely debunked. I think everybody's well aware of what happened with the Roswell slides. I remember years ago when I was reading online. In fact, it was at my favorite, for those of you that have followed my eating habits, my favorite Mongolian grill before it shut down. I was reading online and I came across a post about these mysterious, there hadn't even been Roswell slides yet. There were only the rumors that there might be some Roswell slides. And I remember reading that and my imagination was just like going crazy. The idea of, you know, what could this be? There's a new twist in the Roswell story. It was very exciting. But as time passed, and if you go back and listen to the archives of this show, you'll know I'm telling the truth here. I was very, very skeptical for months leading up to the release of the Roswell slides. I didn't buy it. I didn't buy that there were photographs of an alien. And really, even more than that, even if there were and nobody could figure out what they were, to me, it still didn't prove anything. They would just be mysterious photographs. And at the end of the day, it took 18 hours for people to figure out what exactly was on those Roswell slides. A huge disappointment. It was a really fun story to cover, but a big letdown in the end, as it usually is with these kinds of stories.
Well, I think it's, you know, yes, if you want it to be something, you know, concrete and conclusive, it certainly was a letdown. But I think it's very much, you know, science at work. I mean, that's what happens. New evidence comes forward, new theories are proposed, and they are proven or disproven. And I think this really doesn't clarify, nor does it take away anything from the Roswell story. And I think the Roswell story, very straightforward. And I've been to Roswell, New Mexico. I haven't been to the UFO crash site, but I've been to all the museums. I've took the little tours and all that. I mean, I've been hands-on at Roswell, New Mexico myself. And, you know, I am certain of one thing. I am certain that, again, like I said before, the official version of the story is not what happened. Now, I don't know what happened. I'm inconclusive myself, but I do know that I am very, very certain, in the 90 percentile certain, that the official government version of the story is not what happened there. But the Roswell slides, to me, were going to be an interesting piece of anecdotal evidence had they turned out to be legitimate. But even though they didn't, I don't think that's a critique on the Roswell incident itself. I don't think it takes away anything from it. There was no new information there, is all it amounted to. And I'm still hopeful that at some point in time, although as eyewitnesses get older and die off and firsthand tellings of those stories get further and further into history, it's going to be more and more difficult to ever get to the real truth of what happened in Roswell, New Mexico. And that's a shame. I really do hope it's one of those mysteries that can be solved in our lifetime, although there's been such a cover-up, legitimate cover-up, and such a and at the same time, the people that have spun this into, you know, a whole UFO subculture have also cast you know, a negative eye on the whole situation, where a lot of people take it as a joke, and I think it's unfortunate. I really would like to know what did happen in the desert just outside Roswell, New Mexico, back in the 1940s. I don't know, but one day I hope we will know.
Another story that allegedly has been debunked, but if you really follow the story, maybe we don't have the answer yet. That is the story of KIC8462852, which is not a password. It is a star. And earlier this year, scientists discovered that it was flickering in a very unusual way. And there were a lot of theories about why it was flickering in such a strange way. And one of them that people brought up was the idea that maybe there is a giant alien megastructure around the star. This was not something that crazed conspiracy theorists were suggesting. This was something that real scientists were considering. Not suggesting, but considering. What could be causing this weird flicker? It doesn't make any sense. One of the ideas was maybe it's a huge alien megastructure. So, what happened was a telescope array was pointed at the star because they wanted to find out why this was happening. They directed a radio telescope at the star. And what happened was they got no evidence of any alien radio signals emanating from this KIC 8462852. And so because of that, they concluded, well, we do know one thing. It's not an alien megastructure. And I guess now they're thinking it's some sort of weird thing involving comets. It's a natural phenomenon, is what they're saying. My whole thing is, and I know other people think this as well, like you, Carl, I am not a conspiracy theorist, but I do try to look at things in as logical a manner as possible. And it seems strange to me that the whole idea, they still don't know what's causing the flicker. They still have no idea what's causing the flicker. But they have ruled out an alien megastructure because when they pointed their radio telescopes, they did not get radio signals that we presume an alien civilization would be, I guess, propagating into the universe or whatever. And my whole thing is, and has always been, you and I are doing what I call right now a radio show. But this actual show is not being broadcast over the radio anywhere. It is an internet radio show. We are not transmitting any radio signals into outer space. Now, granted, we have, but we have for a very, very, very short period of time. You go back 200 years, we weren't broadcasting any radio signals. You go forward 50 years from now, there may be no radio signals being sent from this planet. We have no idea what any civilization anywhere else in the universe, if they exist, is using for technology. Maybe they aren't transmitting radio signals out into the universe. Maybe they communicate in a different way. Maybe they never even invented radio. Maybe they had another technology based on whatever they have available in their planetary system that they use to communicate. And thus, to me, the idea that it's being completely ruled out that it could be an alien megastructure because they didn't find what they expect to find there. The history of science is about people not finding what they expect to find everywhere in this universe. So, I am not ruling out the possibility that maybe there is something surrounding that star. I don't know. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. But I can't rule it out just because we didn't find any radio signals coming from this star.
No, I absolutely agree with you 100%. If you pull up, and these maps are readily available, I saw one particular image sent out many times over the course of this year. Our radio footprint in the universe itself, if you look at the oldest known radio signals we've sent that have been sent out in the universe from us, are a very small footprint in the overall, even the Milky Way galaxy itself, much less into the broader universe. In fact, if there is a habitable planet with intelligent life that can receive radio signals, our closest neighbors would still not have got those radio signals from us yet. So for us to arrogantly think we can look out into the universe far, far away and intercept something, I mean, that's there's a lot of leaps in logic there that have to be made. Now, again, perhaps their technology is done on a different basis than us. Just because we've learned how to communicate by using radio signals, perhaps they've learned to communicate through other means of energy, or perhaps that's not even a direction they went. We don't know. So just the absence of that alone, I don't think is evidence of anything other than, I don't think it means nothing other than we haven't got detected radio signals from there. I think it's no more or less important than that. As far as the direct observations of what's going on there. I think it's very interesting. I'm reading quite a bit about that. It does seem somewhat explainable if these are bodies of comets that are orbiting this particular sun. But at the same time, there does seem to be some inconsistencies with that. So I think, again, to me, all possible scenarios are still open. I think you have to look at really everything with a skeptical eye. And again, I would argue that our definition of what we call skeptics nowadays, they've kind of taken the term and made it something that's not really like for to be a skeptic. You've got to seems like accept the general story and be skeptical. That's not even a word. I just created it about everything else out there that doesn't fall under the official story, but yet you're not skeptical of the official story. And I find that utterly baffling. I find it frustrating that take global warming, for instance. If you're a global warming skeptic, yes, all the science may in fact be against you, and you may in fact and probably are in fact wrong about your assumptions. But by questioning the data and questioning it repeatedly because you're skeptical of it, I think is the true heart of science and true heart of skepticism. Because if you're in fact right, the truth is going to stand up against your doubts. And the more doubts you have, the more far-fetched it's going to be and the more proof there's going to be of it. I think for something like global warming out there, and the reason I use that is because it's such a divisive topic that a lot of people have been talking about. But the truth is there is some disputable data out there. Now, in all likelihood, the planet is warming greatly because of mankind's influence upon it. But still, there is trouble with some of the data. And that is not something that needs just swept under the rug, ignored, and forgot about. Because if, in fact, that is true, and I do believe it is, but if it is, in fact, true, then we shouldn't be running from scandal or incorrect data and things like that. We should be the first people to stand up and say, okay, look, there was some things going on here that shouldn't have been. Let's try to, restudy this, because we want to be transparent and we want to, be open about all this. And instead, it seems like, if you're a skeptic nowadays, you've got to buy the official story and not question it, but it's question everything else. And so with the case of this potential extraterrestrial thing that's being built out there, possibly around the spark, possibly like a Dyson sphere or something like that, I say all possibilities are still on the table until they're conclusively one by one taken off, or it is conclusively shown that this is a body of comets around the star, whatever the case may end up being.
We got two more here. One you've brought up here, these last two are actually your suggestions. The idea of possible running water on Mars. You can fill everybody in on this. I will just say that Mars on its surface, literally on the surface, literally and figuratively, appears to be a dead planet. However, I would not be the least bit surprised if within the next couple of years we discover that there is some sort of microbial life living underneath the surface of Mars, having moved under there because the surface obviously is inhospitable to life. What can you tell us about the discoveries regarding water on Mars?
Well, this all started coming out back around the fall of this year, around September or so. There had been observed dark streaks on the surface of Mars, and it had long been assumed that these had some sort of bearing on possible water being on the planet. However, the surface temperature and the fact that, as you said, Mars appears to be a dead, geologically inactive planet right now, the case was still out on it. However, tests have shown these now to, while flowing liquid water has not been directly observed, so we can't 100% say that this is in fact happening, they have detected hydrated salts on the slopes of one of the craters there that are causing these dark streaks. And they believe that in the warmer times of the year, that underground salinated water is seeping onto the surface of the planet. And again, we haven't directly observed these, but now I think all eyes are on those. And evidence certainly is strongly suggesting that there is, at some points in time in the year, underground water flows that are basically like what we would call springs here on Earth. These will be salt water coming to the surface, so it wouldn't be like, you know, drinkable fresh water or anything like that. But that just further alludes to the hope of possibly some microscopic life forms, maybe bacterial life. We don't know. Hopefully we can get some direct observation. There is some kind of ridiculous treaties in place through different nations that, believe it or not, actually prohibit the like the landers going there and directly observing this for fear of contaminating this, if there is water there, contaminating it. So there are some governmental red tape that has to be worked through before we can directly observe this. But hopefully in the next few years anyway, if there is flowing water there on Mars, we can get an actual legitimate direct observation of it. And hope so. That would be one of the biggest off-planet discoveries we've made in our
ever.
Lifetime.
Lifetime.
Yeah, we've never observed actual flowing water on any planet, so this would be fantastic.
And finally, you have got some notes here on the Pluto images, which I am way behind on. So tell everybody what the story is about these images of Pluto.
Yeah, I just think we would be remiss in talking about some of the biggest stories of the year without discussing Pluto, because you know, Pluto was downgraded from a planet several years ago, so it's no longer considered one of the major planets. But still, it's something that we're all, you know, everybody that's interested in science and in astronomy is very interested in. Pluto's one of the...
This story always makes me feel so old, because I've got a daughter on the way, and inevitably, we're going to have to talk about how many planets there are for her science class, and I'm going to have to tell her, maybe when I was young, there were 9 planets. But now, I'm so old, there's only 8.
Yeah, you've outlived a planet. That's
right, I have.
Yeah. that makes you feel old. But we've discovered that it makes Pluto no less interesting. And now, especially, we've got, for the first time ever, some of the best direct observations. The New Horizons spacecraft actually flew by Pluto back in the early part of the summer and took the most detailed pictures we've ever seen. And in fact, they will be the most detailed pictures we'll see for decades still to come. These are the best ones probably in my lifetime anyway. These will be the best pictures we will see of Pluto. And what we discovered was we expected Pluto to be just a dead, completely uninteresting planet, just so far away from the sun. It gets so little light from the sun. We really expected it to be kind of like our moon, just geographically dead and probably, you know, crater filled and just uninteresting. Instead, it appears to be a geologically active planet. There are mountains and valleys and glaciers and just a wide variety of different terrains on the planet that we didn't expect. And even if there was sufficient sunlight on Pluto, it would even have a blue sky like we have here on Earth because of the composition of the very thin atmosphere, but atmosphere nonetheless there on Pluto. But it's just so far away from the sun that if you were standing on the surface of Pluto, you couldn't really observe the blue hue, but it can be detected and can be shown from images. And so it's just turned out to be a lot more interesting place than we expected it to be. There are, huge mountain ranges and huge canyons that suggests that the planet at one point in time, and maybe even still, does go through active geological changes where We did not expect that at all. And the fact that these will be the best images we see probably in our lifetime, some of the younger listeners they have a chance of possibly seeing more images, but probably for us, these are the best we'll ever see. In fact, their resolution all the way down to about the size of a city block. So we have really good footage of Pluto now, and hopefully a lot can be learned about that, about, you know, here's a planet that's in our solar system, but it is so impossibly far away. Direct observation of Pluto. It's going to be a long, long time before we're ever able to send a lander there or anything like that. So this is probably about as good as it gets.
Well, Carl, I want to thank you so much for this appearance here today. And if you've enjoyed this, everybody, lucky you. Carl's going to be doing a show every single week, Dragon King Dark, up at the new website, AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Want to encourage everybody to head up there and check it out. We still got a lot of work to do, but it's a billion times better than the old website we had. And we are working every day to try to make it better. Going to get some new articles up there. We're going to get some new shows. We got a lot of exciting ideas coming for the website. And Carl, I want to give you an opportunity to let everybody know how to contact you, any social media, how they can get a hold of Carl leading up to your first ever show on the new AfterDarkRadioShow.com.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brian. You can follow along with me and know anything that's coming up at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Anything I'm doing, putting out, you can check me out at my website, DragonKingCarl.com. That's Carl with letter K. K-A-R-L, DragonKingCarl.com. You can follow me on Twitter, where I am at DragonKingCarl. And every day I'm doing some sort of posting over at my website, and I will keep you updated definitely on what's upcoming and what's looking like with Dragon King Dark, as well as my other projects. Again, that's DragonKingCarl.com.
And we will be back in just a moment with, as Carl is going to talk about on his show in the future, some local legends from around here in Cannon Beach, Oregon. So stick around. Back in a moment. We are here, After Dark Radio, Dark Matter, Digital Network. We are back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio, Dark Matter, Digital Network, here every Sunday night, 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern. A replay is available on the website, the new website, AfterDarkRadioShow.com, soon to be the home as well for the brand new Dragon King Dark, featuring Carl Stern every week at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Bookmark the page, spread the word, let your friends know. Trying to build it into a great resource for those that love the unexplained, the paranormal, and stories like The Bandage Man of Cannon Beach. I'm here in our Cannon Beach studios for the holiday weekend, and I thought it'd be fun to take a look at some of the local legends around the Oregon coast, the Cannon Beach area, the seaside area, the area up north in Astoria. Astoria is said to be very, very haunted. Let's take a look at some of these legends right now, starting with where I am, Cannon Beach, Oregon. For those that have never been to Cannon Beach, it is on the edge of the Pacific Ocean. And for some of you older listeners that remember the film The Goonies, if you remember the rock that was seen in that film, I can look out the window literally right now from this studio, and I'm looking directly at the rock from The Goonies. That's where I am right now. Not a lot of Bigfoot sightings here in Cannon Beach. Cannon Beach is a small town. We will get to a local Bigfoot sighting here in a moment. But the big legend around Cannon Beach is that of the Bandage Man. This story here is from a poster named Isis. I-S-I-S. This obviously is an older post. It is not a reference to the terrorist organization, but rather, I'm sure, the Egyptian god. Isis on the unexplained-mysteries.com forum writes, "I just found the information I was looking for regarding the ghost that is seen in people's cars up here in Oregon. It is called the Bandage Man, And here is how the story goes, according to one researcher. A bit of Oregon esoterica for everyone, and it is a ghost story to boot, the Bandage Man of Cannon Beach. The Bandage Man is a phantom of a man completely wrapped in bandages that haunts this small community. The bloody figure, who smells of rotting flesh, jumps into vehicles passing on a road outside of town, notably pickup trucks or open-topped cars, but also sedans, station wagons, and even sports cars. Sometimes the mummy breaks windows or leaves behind bits of bloody or foul-smelling bandages. One legend has it that he is the ghost of a dead logger cut to pieces in a sawmill accident. The Bandage Man is sometimes said to eat dogs, may have murdered several people. He appears on the short approach road connecting U.S. Highway 101 to Cannon Beach. Between the town and where Highway 26 intersects with 101, the phantom always vanishes just before reaching town. If this reminds you, by the way, of any other legends, stand by, because I have some for you. I first came across the story of Bandage Man in the book Ghosts, Critters, and Sacred Places of Washington and Oregon, and it stood out because it is not the typical sounds and thumps in the night type of ghost story that fills books like these. Not surprisingly, there is not much on the web about Bandage Man. Digging around only reveals a handful of sites with pretty much the same one or two paragraph description. However, I did find this post on the Mystery Planet Epps MSN group that sheds light on the origin of the legend. I was Googling on the chance that I might find some mention somewhere of the Bandage Man. I have been aware of this story for over 40 years, for I was a child in the community where it got its start. I knew some of the family of the kid that first encountered the Bandage Man. There is an old road that for all the years I was growing up was known as Bandage Man Road. It was just an old section of Highway 101 that had been bypassed when a new section was put in place, but it was still accessible and wasn't very long, just a short loop off the highway. The whole thing from end to end could be driven in maybe 5 minutes or so. And I digress to tell you, I know the exact loop because that is the exit we take to get to the condo. We take that exit every single time we come to Cannon Beach. If you do not take the exit, this is the loop they are talking about. The loop of road was a popular place, it says, for local kids to go and park and make out. That is where the story started. One night, two of the local kids were up there doing just what teenaged boys and girls do when they are parked on dark, lonely roads. The boy had an old Chevy pickup, and his girl and he were sitting in the cab. All of a sudden, they felt the truck sort of lean, like something was moving around in the bed of the truck. They turned to look out the rear window, and there looking back was a bandaged face, with only some weird-looking eyes showing through eye holes in the bandages. The bandaged figure started beating on the glass and the top of the cab. The kid started his engine, got it in gear, and tore out of there, his girlfriend screaming in terror as the man in the back continued its pounding. Any of you who have been to Bandage Man Road or Cannon Beach know how curvy the roads are, and to drive them at high speed is very dangerous. On they went, after what seemed an eternity, they made it to downtown Cannon Beach, where the boy's family owned a service station that they lived next door to in a green house. Once they got there, they looked in the back, and the bandaged figure was nowhere to be seen. I first heard this story back in 1960 or 1961, said the poster, and it is the original version. Some of the family of the kid still lives around here, too. I know two of his brothers, the famous friend of a friend urban legend. Says here, I guess you better watch out if you're driving around Cannon Beach, if you believe that sort of thing. And this poster notes, there are reports of Bandage Man sightings from Lincoln City all the way to Seaside, which is about a 90-minute to 2-hour stretch of road. I have not heard any recent sightings, but it could be that they have not been reported. I will let you know if I hear of any written sightings. Any recent written sightings. I have driven that road from Cannon Beach to Seaside at least probably 4 times this weekend. Haven't seen the Bandage Man yet. We did, however, see a dead elk, which was no good. But no bandage, man. I will keep my eyes peeled. Chugnut.com, there was an anonymous poster who said, and this was in September of 2005, I saw the bandage man with a group of friends about 2 years ago. So he is claiming he saw the bandage man in 2003. We were traveling home to Portland from the beach. We go to the beach in the middle of the night, so it was about 3 a.m. We saw the bandage man. We saw a man running in a very strange fashion down the highway with strips of white cloth hanging from his body. We had no idea what we saw, and we were freaked out. We didn't know if it was a ghost or some crazy man. Funny thing is that none of us knew the legend at the time. A few months later, my mom was talking about the ghost legend of Oregon, and Bandage Man came up. I was in shock. He claimed he saw a physical Bandage Man. 2003. This, of course, if you are a fan of urban legends, as I am, when I was young, I used to love the books by Jan Harold Brumvand, I believe was his name. He wrote The Vanishing Hitchhiker, The Choking Doberman, all of these classic books before there was an internet and a Snopes that you could go to get all of them for free. I, of course, had heard the story many times of The Hook Man, which sounds very similar to The Bandage Man. This here from Supernatural Wiki, if you've not heard of the Hook Man legend. Hook Man is an urban legend that began circulating widely in the 1950s. There were many variations, but the basic story is the same. It begins when a teenage boy, of course, takes his unsuspecting date out to Lover's Lane for a makeout session. While there, they hear a report of a murderer who has escaped from a nearby insane asylum. The newscaster says everyone should be on the lookout for this crazy man who has a hook in place of his right hand. The girl becomes frightened, especially when the couple hears a strange scratching sound coming from outside the car, but her date insists everything is fine and tries to continue making out. The girl resists, and eventually the boy relents and drives her home. When they arrive back at the girl's house, the girl exits the car and begins screaming hysterically. When her date exits the car as well, he sees a bloody, detached hook embedded in the roof of the car and realizes that the hook man would have scratched through to the interior of the car if they had stayed at Lover's Lane any longer. If you've ever heard this legend, the way that I heard it was very similar to that, except the hook was not scratching the top of the car. The boyfriend and the girlfriend speed back to town. He goes to open the door for her, and hanging from her door is the hook. The hook man had been trying to get in. Says here, some of the key features of the hook man story are that there is a radio warning of an escaped convict or madman. The couple survives, and they find the hook embedded in the car door once they are safely home. It has been told in the U.S. since the 1950s, is one of the most widely known and frequently studied urban legends in the whole world. There's another legend, which is similar. It is the urban legend of the boyfriend's death, which dates from the 1960s, has some similarities but many differences from the hook. The boyfriend's death is also set on a lover's lane, occasionally interpolates the radio warning aspect of the hook, but the most common similarity is that the killer is often said to be the hook man. Significant differences between the boyfriend's death and the hook include, in the boyfriend's death story, the boy exits the car to find out what's going on. The girl is terrified. She stays in the car. She ends up in the car all night long. She hears this scratching on the top of the car, this scratching noise, and she's terrified. And she stays there all night. Finally, the next day, the cops come, and they discover the boyfriend dead. He is hanging upside down from the tree, and it is his fingernails scraping the top of the car as the body waves back and forth in the wind. That is the original boyfriend's death urban legend. There are non-Hookman versions of the boyfriend's death, including a Navajo version that attributes the death to a skinwalker. And in Europe, particularly in the UK, the boyfriend is usually decapitated by an axe man who sits on the roof of the car bouncing the head like a basketball till the authorities arrive. There's a version of the boyfriend's death from Snopes.com. Two students had gone out to neck in a car on an isolated country road. Afterwards, the car would not start, of course. Girlfriend got spooked. Boyfriend said he would walk for help, but suggested she first get down on the floor of the car in the back and put a blanket over her so no one looking in would see her. Told her not to look out or get out until he returned, and told her to stay put no matter what she heard, and then he walks off, leaving her hidden. He doesn't return, and then she hears the tap, 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 tap sound on the top of the car. Despite her growing panic, she does not get out, remains huddled there all night long, listening to the irregular tapping sounds. Finally, the day grew light outside. She heard somebody walk up to the car. A man's voice calls out, "Is anybody in there?" It's a local sheriff. Peeks out and he tells her to get out of the car, walk down the road to the waiting sheriff's car, and whatever you do, don't look back. Of course, she walks down the road to the car. She cannot help herself. She looks back, and there is her boyfriend's head impaled on the CB antenna, and the blood is dripping down onto the car. Hookman legend ties into the story of the alleged Bandage Man of Cannon Beach. As noted, there was a Bigfoot sighting in the area. This from OregonBigfoot.com. It is a file report from January 27, 2006. Nearest town, Cannon Beach. Nearest road, Highway 26. It was in the early morning, 4 miles past Camp 18, heading from the coast to Portland, Oregon. It was actually the same route that the individual claimed he was taking to go home when they saw the physical Bandage Man, dude wrapped in bandages on the side of the road, running down the road. Report detail. Description of event. I was driving from the coast to Portland, 4 miles past Camp 18 restaurant in a gravel pull-off area. I noticed a large creature with long reddish-brown hair with a human-like figure. I was driving a tractor trailer and my view of sight is around 8.5 to 9 feet. The creature was about 8.5 feet tall and very bulky. I was driving about 50 miles per hour, so I couldn't make out a face, just the long hair. I knew right away this couldn't have been any of the local bears in the area. It was too large to be a bear. I was thinking of going back, but I was too scared to go back. It probably left the area anyway. OregonBigfoot.com, the source of that report, a rare Bigfoot sighting. You would think, and I've mentioned many times how weird this is, you would think with all of the woods around here, I look out the window, there's woods, there's trees, there's snow. You would think if people were just making up these Bigfoot sightings, if they're just making them up, if they're just making mistakes, if they're just seeing an elk that they think is a Bigfoot, why don't we have more sightings here in Cannon Beach, Oregon? I do not have an answer to that. Some haunted areas. If you are in the area, might be a good show to save. You can go and visit a lot of these places if you're in Cannon Beach, Seaside, or Astoria. A lot of this comes from hauntedplaces.org, which actually would be a good place to check out no matter where you live or where you are visiting here in this country. Hauntedplaces.org has probably got a lot of good places for you to check out. First one here is actually in Cannon Beach, Oregon, the Argonata Inn Beach House. It says here that Genghis Hansel disappeared from here after the Great Storm of 1952. Some say his ghost still lingers in the house, giving guests an eerie feeling, especially around its many secret doors. I checked this place out. I've never been here, which actually I should go check out. But if you go to Google Street View, the Argonata Beach House, you could actually see our condos from that beach house. That's how close it is from where I am right now. So I'm going to have to go check that one out. The Shiloh Inn Suites. Apart from a stunning view of the area, the hotel has much more to offer, including some ghost stories. Staff and guests have reported having their names called out when there is no one around, cold spots, running footsteps, and an entity which has been known to push people around. The Surfside Inn, I believe all of this is in the Seaside area now. The inn's only claim to fame is that it was once visited by a former president during a visit to the coast. Staff and guests complain of a spook that throws objects at guests in various rooms throughout the establishment. That's in Seaside. Rag and Bone Thrift Shop. The thrift shop is haunted by a playful spirit who has been known to move objects around and tussle people's hair. The Old Wheeler Hotel. Here, folks have witnessed apparitions in reflections or from the corner of their eyes, and spirit orbs have appeared in photographs. Troubles during renovations were attributed to ghosts who were not welcome to the change, but at last the spirits gave in and allowed the place to be restored. We have Fort Stevens State Park, which I have visited. I had no ghostly encounters, but I have been there. It's actually pretty cool. At Stevens State Park, Battery Russell has a bike path said to be haunted by a man in his 20s who holds a flashlight and searches for enemy soldiers. Unexplained sounds also have been reported, as well as cold spots and an apparition of a man in fatigues carrying a long knife. We've got the Liberty Theater in Astoria. I tried to get into the Liberty Theater, but the Liberty Theater is closed until the new year. There is no way in. It is located on a corner in downtown. It is very, very old. It looks creepy. I can't tell anything more about it, except it says here, the historic 1925 theater has played host to the likes of Jack Benny, Guy Lombardo, Duke Ellington, and Al Capone. It is home to a ghost nicknamed Handsome Paul, who appears suited up for a night out. The apparition of an elderly woman has been seen as well. The ghosts are known to turn on the soda fountains and the popcorn machines in the night, and puzzled employees find them running in the morning. Other spooky phenomenon have occurred there. Knobs rattle, doors knock, items move, etc. We have also got the Uppertown Firefighters Museum. Historic building built in 1896 as an original brewery before being converted to the town fire station. Building is now a museum preserving the past of the town's firefighting history and perhaps a few ghosts as well. Building is allegedly haunted by the apparition of a sleepwalking fireman who fell to his death back in the 20s. Former occupants of the building would see him standing over them as they slept and hear lockers rattling by themselves. Today, visitors and staff claim to hear strange noises and disembodied footsteps on the third floor, but upon investigating, nobody is ever found. We have the Rogales Public House, the brew pub located on the pier of a former cannery that employed children as laborers. A little girl once fell off the pier and drowned in an accident, and staff and patrons to the pub believe she still haunts the general area where she passed away. Around closing time and often after hours, staff have witnessed lights turning on and off of their own accord and have heard ghostly laughter. And finally, a place I visited yesterday, the Flavel House. George Flavel, Captain George Flavel, was one of the most influential citizens in the entire history of Astoria. I'll read this here from cottageinthemaking.blogspot.com. Captain George Flavel was one of Astoria's most influential citizens in the late 1800s. Long story short, he built this house. It is approximately 11,600 square feet, 6 original fireplaces. First floor has 14-foot high ceilings. Second floor has 12-foot high ceilings. It was fitted with indoor plumbing and gas lights. Outside is in the Queen Anne architectural style. Flavel married his wife, Mary, when she was only 14 and he was 30. They had two daughters. Two daughters never married. The son did, although he never lived in the house. To cut to the chase, George Flavel apparently, well, I mean, I know he died, but he died in the bed in the house, which I might add, the bed Captain Flavel died in is still in the house. The same bed. In 1951, the city wanted to tear the house down and turn it into a parking lot. However, the locals organized to save the home, and the Flavel House was made into a museum. 1995, the Clatsop County Historical Society was given the title to return the home to its original state. You can now tour the city. I think I paid $6 to take a look around. Here is a listing of the various haunted rooms here in this building. There was the bedroom of the daughter, Katie. She spent many years sleeping in this room. Once her father died, she moved into his room, and she passed away in that room. Volunteers have told stories of strange things happening in this room. The curtains have been closed by the volunteers, and when they leave the room and return after a few minutes, the curtains are opened again, yet nobody else is around. They believe it is the ghost of Katie, who always wanted her curtains open during the day. She is opening them up. There is the library. It is where Captain Flavelle spent many hours doing research on the tides and reading. This was the room they called the heart of the house. By the way, there was a video about Captain Flavelle. This house was built in the early to mid-1800s. As noted, 11,000 square feet. As modern could be for the early 1800s. I believe they said he spent $37,000 to build this house, which should tell you a little bit about how inflation has worked over the years. Captain Flavelle, when he died, one of the richest men in all of Astoria. Everybody knew Captain Flavelle. Everybody basically worked for him in some way since he had 8 million businesses. But when he died, his fortune, one of the richest men in town, $700,000. Times have changed. There's the family parlor, used by the family on special occasions, where the daughters entertained the male visitors. It was also the room where the captain's body was viewed after he passed away in 1893. There is the music room. One of the volunteers who now works at the house said they often hear music coming from a music box that used to be in the room. It had a large, heavy lid, which had to be lifted to start the mechanism. The volunteer would sit in the hall near the front door and could see everybody who came in and out, yet no one would ever be in the house when she heard the music box playing. Once she told other volunteer workers about hearing this, they also said they had heard it several times as well. In 2006, a writer asked about the music box. He was told that the music box used to be in the music room, but one day when the volunteers came in, it was gone. To this day, nobody knows what happened to it, and there was not a break-in. This person here says they took a bunch of photos, and in one of them, they noticed an orb in the room. I did, in fact, take a bunch of photos, and I had a plan, because I am not a fan, as I've told many times on this show, I am not a fan of mirrors. I am always afraid I will look in a mirror, and I will see something that is not supposed to be there. But I was there with my wife. My pregnant wife. And so I had to be a tough guy. And so I went around and I took photographs in every single one of the mirrors. And I was thinking, I'm going to go and I'm going to look at these photos and I am going to see something in one of these mirrors. Nothing. I am sad to report that all of my photos showed nothing. Of course, maybe there is something in there and I didn't look hard enough. I can always go back and look at them. But I was very disappointed. Nothing strange was found in any of the photographs. And there was another room. There was another room here where I guess the daughter had slept in this room, and there were dolls. Everybody's favorite haunted dolls. I'll upload some of these pictures to my... In fact, I think one of them is on my Twitter right now. If you go to @BrianAlvarez and look through the photos, you can see a photo of the bed with a doll laying on the bed. What could be worse than a very old room in an allegedly haunted house full of mirrors with a doll laying on the bed? Nothing happened. There are sink faucets. This person here took some photos and got more orbs when they took photos of the sink and faucet. There are the fireplaces. There are, I guess, allegedly other stories. I'm looking through right here to see if there's anything fascinating. Not really, just a bunch of photos they took. I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything. I cannot report any paranormal activity, unfortunately, during my tour of the Flavelle house. I was entertained to see some Civil War reenactors that were there. It was a little bit weird because we were in watching the movie and I saw them all come in and my wife pointed them out to me and I looked at them and we continued watching the film. This is the one weird thing, which is probably just me not paying attention, which I'm well known for not paying attention. I saw them come in. I never saw them come out. And when we went out after the movie was over, they were gone. So I don't know how they got out of there, but they got out of there. They were there doing, I guess, a Civil War reenactment in the... There is a dining area, obviously, in the house, and they were there eating their food, whatever their Civil War reenacted food was. They were there eating that. That was interesting. It is a very, very creepy house. It has been refurbished to very close to its original state. A lot of the stuff that is in there is original from that time period, even if it wasn't original from that particular house. Didn't see anything, but a lot of people have. So if you ever get an opportunity to head to the Flavel House in downtown Astoria, I do recommend you check that one out. And maybe I'll go back again. My friend Tina, who we did about a year ago, we did a ghost hunt. And me and her husband Jack went into the old dojo down the road from my house, and we brought in all of the equipment. Got some weird readings. Got a couple of weird photos, to be honest. But that was it. And she offered to lend me her equipment, her ghost hunting equipment, which she has. So maybe the next time I come down here to Cannon Beach, I will bring that equipment, see if we can bring some of it in. I don't want to get in trouble. They don't let you bring drinks or anything in there, but see if I can bring something in and see if I can get any readings. There were a lot of people there, but I'll see what I can do next time. Safely, of course, not doing any damage, obviously, to the famous Flavel House. We're going to be back in just a moment with reader emails, everybody. I got a couple here, so stick around. Back in just a moment, After Dark Radio, here on the Dark Matter Digital Network. We are back here on the show. We got a couple of reader emails here today before we wrap it up. I did send out a request for your scary stories. All I can say is holiday weekend. No emails. Got a couple of them from a couple of weeks ago, however. A couple of them involve the faceless woman phenomenon. If you listen to last week's show, it's talking about the faceless woman. And I asked if anybody listening had had any experiences with a faceless woman. Any stories they would like to share? Obviously, my email address, which apparently is not up on the new website yet, but it's easy to remember, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. You can send me email there. I'll try and read it on the show every week. But James here says, Brian, I was listening to your show when you mentioned the faceless woman phenomenon. It sent me wondering if this could be some early childhood memory impressed by the consciousness shortly after birth. Specifically, a nurse in a delivery room or in a maternity ward would wear a surgical mask, thus appearing to be faceless, and they would wipe down the baby, so it might be this early experience which is being recalled. It's possible. It's possible. Somebody suggested a great idea for a show. In fact, it's. I'll just read it right now. This is from Peeve Peaver, which I don't think is his real name, but who knows. He says, I didn't see a faceless woman from my crib, but I did have a coral snake wrap itself around my crib. The room turned dark, and a huge, gigantic coral snake wrapped itself around the crib that I was in. Do I think it was a dream? No. A vision. It was a very scary, evil vision. I also screamed bloody murder, and my sister came running for me. You should do a show about early visions or memories from under 1 year of age. You might find some amazing stuff. And in fact, that is what I'm going to put out a request for here right now. The holidays are over, everybody. It's time to start sending in some emails. Do you have memories of anything that occurred to you before you were 1 year old? And I want to hear this because my daughter is scheduled to be born. Scheduled, I said, as if this is a professional wrestling show. She's scheduled to be born on February 27th. I would love to hear these stories. Do you have any memories that you believe were memories from before you were even 1 year old? If you have any of these, email me, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. And I will read some next week here on the show. The only reason I'm skeptical about the faceless woman phenomenon being an early vision of like a nurse with no face is, and this is speculation on my part, but my strong speculation is when you're in the womb, obviously, you've never seen a face. You don't even know what a face is. So in order for you as a baby to determine that somebody doesn't have a face, you would have had to have seen a whole bunch of faces. So if the first thing you see is a doctor in a surgical mask, you have no frame of reference. You have no way of thinking this man doesn't have a face because you don't even know what a face is yet. So I don't know. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but I don't know if I would buy that as the reason that a person would have a memory. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe as the years go by and you learn what a face is, you have these memories of the man in the surgical mask, and then you start extrapolating and it becomes, this man had no face, and you remember it for the rest of your life. I don't know. But again, as this guy suggested, I would love to hear your stories. If you believe that you have memories from before you were 1 year old, which because you have no ability to communicate, you don't know any language, you have no way of forming and remembering, that you only have images. So it would be very interesting if anybody, that's why most people don't remember anything until they're X number of years old. They learn to talk, they learn to read, etc. If you remember anything from before you were 1 year old, email me, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com, and we will discuss these on the show next week. And with that, everybody, we are completely out of time. I want to thank you so much for listening to the show here today. Don't forget to check out the brand new website, afterdarkradioshow.com. It looks great. Apparently, it looks great on the phone as well. I haven't had a chance to look at it there, but the mobile version apparently looks very good. So check it out. We're going to have some new stories. Carl's going to be writing some articles. Hopefully, Andrew's going to be writing some articles. I'll try to write some articles. I'll try and keep the news updated there. If you'd like to help, feel free to email me, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. Maybe we can figure out a way to get you writing some stuff for the website if you think that you'd like to contribute. Obviously, this show is going to be up there as a free download. Check that out. And spread the word. Tell your friends about After Dark Radio. And let's build this thing up. Once again, thank you all for listening. Thanks, Keith Rowland, all the folks at the Dark Matter Digital Network, Carl Stern, all of you the listeners. We will talk to you again next week, After Dark Radio, here on the Dark Matter Digital Network. Sweet.